Monday mornings here on The Takeaway, we set up the week ahead with your agenda to check out the headlines. They're going to be moving stories all week. This week, we're joined by Molly Ball, staff writer for The Atlantic, and by the way, tweeter extraordinaire. Hi, Molly.
Hi, thank you.
Also joined in the studio, of course, Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway, and our co-producer, WNYC, sitting right across from me.
What's my sobriquet? What's my Twitter extraordinaire?
Talker extraordinaire.
There you go.
And economics man extraordinaire. And it's a good reason why we have you here, Charlie, because Celeste was talking earlier in the hour about the Walmart story down in Mexico and these allegations of bribery and cover-up. This has to have market implications for Walmart as the markets open this week.
It's a remarkable story that the New York Times has this really long investigative piece that's really worth looking at because, you know, for a long time now when it comes to Walmart, the action has really been what's happening overseas, what's happening internationally. Their sales in the U.S. have faltered. They've had some difficulty here. And Eduardo Castro-Wright, who was the person who led Mexico to this huge expansion and was there during the time of these alleged bribery allegations, was a rising star at Walmart. At one point, he was sort of seen to become the next CEO. And at a certain point, for various reasons, some of it having to do with some of the decisions the company made under his watch in the U.S., he sort of was shifted out to other positions. I mean, the thing that's really important here that your previous guest talked about was that this sort of thing can have a life of its own, this sort of investigation. Siemens is a great example in Germany. There was a huge study that was done in terms of the bribery allegations that happened there. This could theoretically spread beyond Mexico. And it's
what
just,
about stock price today?
Well, we have stock to watch price, that? I mean, I don't want to predict directly. You never know how sure. Investors are going to look at this. But clearly, this is not something that shareholders want to see or investors want to see because it'll start raising questions about who are the future leaders of the company. Does this have broader implications? Are there big shakeup changes at management level? And that always makes shareholders nervous, and that would usually push a stock price down.
All right. We're going to be watching Walmart in the markets today on the heels of this these corruption allegations described in detail in the New York Times. Molly, the Supreme Court, meanwhile, is going to hear oral arguments today in the case of Arizona v. United States. Now, this, of course, is about the controversial Arizona immigration law, SB 1070. Listen to Arizona Governor Jan Brewer. She certainly thinks this case has strong political implications.
It has been a question that has elicited numerous questions and numerous answers. So I think it's very, very important. I think it's a flashpoint in this election.
All right. That's kind of a little bit of a general answer from Jan Brewer there. But Molly, on the specifics, what does this case mean for immigration policy, more importantly, for the election?
Sure. I think you have to agree with the governor there that there's clear political implications with this. In a lot of ways, it will be a rerun of the health care arguments from a few weeks ago, where the court is wading into this intensely politicized issue where both sides have a lot at stake, where the president and his administration have a lot at stake, where Republicans have a lot at stake as well. Even though this law and others like it in other states have been broadly popular with the public, they are a reminder, particularly to Latino voters, of something that has been a real flashpoint for that community at a time when the Republicans and Mitt Romney are trying to turn toward the general election and strike a more friendly tone with a demographic group that's expected to be a crucial swing vote in a lot of swing states. And so this may be a tricky thing for him to navigate. And I think also, as with healthcare, you have a conservative court that people will be listening to very closely in terms of how the justices question the lawyers to try to get a sense of where they may be going with this and how that may play out for both the political issue and the legal issue of whether this law is going to stand.
It's remarkable, Molly Ball, that you mentioned the two areas that are in front of the Supreme Court right now, both core important demographic groups for Democrats. On health care, of course, women voters who make mm-hmm. most of the health care decisions, especially in the middle class, and Latino voters, two key areas where Republicans are trying to bite into to Democrats' dominance of those two key demographic areas. A lot of it could rest in the court.
A lot of it could. And the court has really made itself, intentionally or not, central to the political discussion in this election season. And I think we've seen that in terms of how the candidates are positioning themselves vis-a-vis the court as well. We have the president taking some tentative steps toward potentially being able to run against the court if there is an adverse ruling. Remember, these rulings are going to come down probably in June at a time when the general election season is really heating up. And at the same time, you've seen some very favorable rhetoric from Romney toward the court. Conservatives are not always fans of the judiciary. judiciary. But in this case, Romney, I think, has been subtly positioning himself so that he can run as the court's friend if, in fact, these decisions come down that, again, are adverse to Obama and his administration.
Charter, let's turn overseas for a moment because—
To another election.
Well, another election in France, certainly. François Hollande going to give Nicolas Sarkozy a run for his money. But in the backdrop of all of this is the Eurozone crisis— the philosophical battle between austerity versus stimulus, and it's really coming down in France. But the euro crisis is really not over.
It's not over. It's not resolved. I mean, you just saw last week the IMF at its annual meeting. They announced that there's more money available, $430 billion that will be made available, basically another fund to backstop the euro should there be more problems. And what we saw this weekend with François Hollande leading Nicolas Sarkozy and the presidential election, which is expected to the election is set for May 6th, is he is more of a fan of boosting government spending, which is different than Sarkozy, which puts the French at odds with Germany and with the relationship between Angela Merkel and with Sarkozy. And so the question is, if he wins and if they sort of reverse policy, what sort of impact does that have on France? And what does that say then for other countries which are trying to put in these austerity measures, Spain, Greece, Italy? And they're finding that it's really difficult to do this. This is a debate we're having a little bit here in the U.S. There we're really seeing it play out. If you really cut government spending, you see the economy starts to shrink, unemployment goes up, housing market gets worse. And so then this creates this negative cycle that Europe just hasn't been able to get out of. We see sort of stabilization moments, but there's no real resolution. And this is a big worry of if Hollande wins, how does things change? Do we go back into a crisis mode?
With clear implications for the American elections, because if the euro brings down the dollar, it has clear implications on where our election goes over the summer. And Molly Ball, just before we wrap up here, we shouldn't forget that on Tuesday there are Republican primaries in New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Delaware, Rhode Island. There was a time when we thought Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney would be fighting it out in Pennsylvania. But what is this? Just sort of a victory lap for Mitt Romney at this point?
Yeah, I think it does seem like it is finally, after so many months of waiting, of trying to wrap it up and failing, Mitt Romney should finally get to take his victory lap here with these primaries. With Rick Santorum dropping out, Pennsylvania no longer this that fight to the death that you're referring to. His only competition technically now, Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul, neither of whom is really registering in people's attention. And these northeastern states ought to be congenial territory for Romney, whether or not he had any competition. However, we do see that they finally learned their lesson, his team not taking any chances. He's campaigned in Pennsylvania last week. He's there today and tomorrow, really making sure that there aren't any unpleasant surprises. Romney's had a few too many unpleasant surprises over the course of this primary. Pennsylvania also a swing state for the general election, so he can lay some groundwork there even as he continues to talk to Republicans.
He's certainly going to use these primaries on Tuesday, and the fact that he's going to do well in all of them as a platform, of course, to attack President Obama and attack the White House. I mean, he's going to have the headlines all to himself, so watch for Mitt Romney to do that. That's Molly Ball, staff writer for The Atlantic, joining us for The Agenda, and also, of course, Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and our co-producer, WNYC Radio. Thank you both.
You bet.
Thanks, Todd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.